When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you remember the 90s ads that were like, be the couch? Do you remember?
Oh, they were terrible. ABC had a whole thing, be the couch. You couch potatoes are your friend. I still have
it was
a mug.
We had those yellow. It was it was a
black
year.
Black and yellow.
Will and I, do you remember the argument we got into that year?
No.
I want to know.
Oh, we went to the party where there was the ABC beginning of the year party where we got those, like, that gear, because that was the whole campaign. It was like, TV is good for you.
Yeah.
And they were promoting
the
Friends
big
time. Right. And so it was like this, like, whole, and we got all this stuff, like mugs and sweaters and t-shirts or whatever. And we were driving back from the party. You were driving me. It was me and then my college girlfriend at the time and you. And we got into such a huge debate. And I remember, like, we were screaming at each other because you were pro TV and I was anti TV, and this campaign launched this discussion. And I remember you just being like, what? So it's better for a whole family to just sit around with their noses in books, nobody talking to each other? And I remember I finally just had to say, Will, you're going to drop us off at home and I don't want to talk about this anymore. It's like one of the few times I get cut off. But it ended up being, I ended up doing a whole thing in college. I think later on that year, that was actually about the negative. I did a presentation about trying to research the negative effects of television. And I came out on the other side. It was funny. So you did change me. You know, you talk about times when I've changed your opinion. This was a very clear time when I got so flustered and upset with you, you know, because in part I felt defending, being anti-TV was important to me because I think at the time it defended the way I had been raised, you know, which made me feel different or special from everybody. And I think also at that time I was very frustrated with Boy Meets World and you know, the sense of the lack of control I felt in my life. And so blaming TV or thinking that TV is this like awful monster was somehow the way I was processing it. And I remember you just like cut through all that bullcrap. I also had a friend at the time who said to me, he was like, you know, Ryder, you hating television and then working in it is sort of like people that, you know, work at tobacco companies, but then don't smoke themselves or talk about it. And it was like, right, there is some sort of ethical problem
dilemma.
And it was, But anyway, you totally changed. I remember that college semester, I ended up doing a whole presentation about television. I went into the history of television and ended up sort of positive about, you know, of course, that there aren't that many negative effects to television watching necessarily, but there's always been a moral panic around it. Every generation has a moral panic around
it is a pretty horrible campaign.
I just remember Be the Couch.
Be the Couch. I still have a mug every, you know, sometimes I'll grab it just by accident. It's with all my other mugs and it just says ABC on one side and then bright yellow, the couch is your friend.
I love it. Man, I wish I had that mug. Welcome to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fishel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
And I'm Will Friedle.
I don't know if you've heard, but we've got merch. That's right. We have got shirts on shirts on shirts. Some might say we have too much shirts, which is one of the shirts we have. We have a Pod Meets World shirt, a Too Much Shirt shirt. We have a shirt with a heart that says Pod Dismissed, which is super cute. And I don't know if you heard the episode last week with Lee Norris, a.k.a. Stuart Minkus, but we have a Hold the Plane for Minkus shirt. But we only have that shirt for 1 week, so please jump on it. If you want it, grab it now, get it while it's hot. You can get all of the shirts at podmeetsworldshow.com, and if you get your shirt, put it on. Take a picture, put it on Instagram, tag us. We will re-quote you, picture you, we'll re-Instagram you. You'll be on our story. So I'm really excited about this episode. Our last episode, we had a fantastic opportunity to talk to Lee. It was so great to have him on.
He's amazing.
He's just incredible. And so is the character of Minkus. And this is a fantastic Minkus episode. Now, this is the first episode you guys filmed. You talked about that in the episode with Lee. We finally arrived. Episode 105, the first episode you guys all recorded together, Killer Bees. Nikki Cox makes her appearance finally. And and we have Dewan Guy as Ellis. He's back. And this synopsis is that Corey enters a geography bee for a chance to be a bat boy at the World Series. Eric is going to an Aerosmith concert with his date, Nikki Cox, and is embarrassed that his mom and dad are going to the same concert.
Yeah, so the thing I remember most about this episode, not only being as nervous as I've arguably ever been in my life, and that's saying something when you're anxiety boy, but I distinctly remember the scene at the end that we'll get to was my audition piece. Like these were the lines I had to say to get the role of Eric Matthews.
When you're talking about the parents being at the same concert as
the
you?
Parents being at the same concert. And I remember the monologue almost verbatim still. Because it was so important and I worked on it and I, you know, tried to make it my own, which of course I was very stiff. Eric still didn't. And it's one of those things where watching it now from a comedic standpoint, I am somehow missing two jokes in every one line. And I just want to go back and grab myself and be like, dude, you just missed four jokes somehow. Like you could have made all of that funny.
Not at all.
It worked at the time, but just where the character ended up, it was like, man, that could have been so much funnier if you do it this way. But that's what I remember most about this episode was being nervous, meeting Nikki.
Yeah.
And this was my audition piece. Like this was how I got Eric Matthews. So this was a fun episode to watch. And by the way, and I've said this before, we talk about how amazing Lee is and he's incredible in this. Ben had some moments in this episode that were laugh out loud funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can't wait.
Well, it was written by Michael Jacobs, April Kelly, and Susan Estelle Jansen. I remember Susan, but I don't. Whatever ended up happening to her? Where did she go? Was she just a writer?
She came and wrote an episode of Girl Meets World. You didn't see her when she came back to Girl Meets World?
No.
She did all seven seasons of Boy.
Wait, was she in all seven?
I'm pretty sure she was in all seven seasons of Boy. She was one of our regulars.
She was definitely one of our, and she was one of the writers I talked to the most and connected with. She recommended books to me.
She's a Harvard grad, if memory serves.
Oh my gosh, yeah. She talked about her professors and like, she's the first person to tell me to read Hemingway. She told me, she was like, you know, because I, of course I hadn't heard of Hemingway, but she was the one who was like, you know what you should read? A Movable Feast. And still to this day, that's like a life-changing book for me.
Yeah,
when I was 14 or 15, she told me to read that. But she was great. She was always, you know, we've talked about we've said this about a couple of different adults, but she was somebody who always talked to us as equals and like would always sit and hang out with us. And like I said, recommend books or movies. And yeah, she
maybe
was
not all seven, but she was there for at least four or five. She was there for a while.
She is one of the people in the folklore of who named Topanga. She is one of the people who may have named Topanga. And writer, when you said, when she came back and wrote an episode of Girl Meets World, it reminded me that I think that's maybe where I had the conversation with her, where she told me she was the one who named Topanga. Guys, my memory
is
just—
Who named Topanga is the new What's the Matrix, like that whole thing. Who named Topanga? Because we got to find that. That's too big a piece of television history.
I know.
We're going to get conflicting results. I think we're going to have, you know, four or five different narratives, and we're going to have to just pick one.
We're going to have to pick one.
Up to the listener to decide. We should maybe do it as a mock trial.
We'll present evidence.
Each one of us will take a case and we'll present the evidence.
A true crime podcast. We'll just go off on a whole different tangent. That'll be great. Oh, that's so funny.
So to start the episode, we are in Mr. Feeney's classroom. Corey is wearing two hoods.
Too much hoods.
Too much hoods.
Is he really wearing two?
He is wearing a hooded sweatshirt and a hooded flannel. And probably a t-shirt underneath, but you can't see it. But
with a hood.
Yeah, probably a t-shirt with a hood. Oh, that's what we gotta make. We're in Feeney's classroom. Minkus gets the highest test score in his class. Corey gets a C on his geography test, even though he says he studies. Or that he studied. Corey argues with Mr. Feeney about the textbook, saying that geography keeps changing, and Sean throws a paper plane at the back of Minkus's head.
Ow.
So do you remember, I know what Will's going to say about this, because he was there too. It wasn't Minkus, right?
Nope.
It was Lemke.
Lemke, right?
Is it Lemke? So his original name was Stuart Lemke, and it lasted throughout the entire week until right before tape night. And I remember thinking Minkus was such a worse name than Lemke.
Agreed.
Lemke was a great name for this character. But apparently, there really was a Stuart Lemke in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia.
It's so crazy. What are the chances? So apparently, you can have a name on a television show that goes through a process called clearance, where the legal team at a studio or a network goes through and checks all the names of characters, all the references to brands or whatever, and clears the names legally so that it's okay to use these things. And if there's a name that's common enough, like in other words, if there's a Corey Matthews, it's likely that there are multiple Corey Matthews in the world, or that there's enough Corey Matthews spread throughout the country, or that it's not one specific place with that one specific name. But it turned out that there actually was one person named Stuart Lemke in Philadelphia. And because of that, that person had a right to sue us if we used their name.
Right.
Unless contacted Stuart Lemke and said, hey, can we name a television character after you? So rather than deal with that, they decided to just change it to Minkus.
Which is great. I mean, what an amazing story.
Yeah.
I hear
Ben going, Lemke, right?
Right.
It's Lemke.
But that was also, I remember Michael working with Ben on that beat. The like, no, draw it out, make it longer. He's like, Lemke, right? It's Lemke. He's like, no, Lemke. Like, you know, Michael kind of giving a read.
A line reading?
Line reading.
And what are you talking about? Michael Jacobs gave line readings?
Yeah, that's what you want is Lemke, right? You want Lemke, like make it a bit kind of thing. And so every time I see that now, I see kind of Michael doing that, the Lemke, right? That was a thing.
Well, you could tell it was a really big favorite of Michael's because we see it three times in it gets called back within minutes.
Yep.
Kept trying to see what was going to stick.
By the way, if you are Stuart Lemke, the Stuart Lemke from Philadelphia around 1993, please reach out to us. Podmeetsworld@gmail.com. We'd love to talk to you.
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great? We get Minkus. Is it Minkus? It's Minkus. And then we get our opening, the absolutely crazy song. I still can't get over it. I've now started skipping it. I was listening to it the opening.
Every time?
Indy
really?
won't let me skip it. He loves it. He loves it. I know.
Okay,
I don't know.
I guess, you know what, listen, there's gotta be a reason why he likes it. A lot of people probably do. I have had to skip it. I just brings me right back to that Hollywood Christmas parade.
I have to skip it.
Yeah. So then we're still in Feeny's in classroom.
It's like an out of tune music box in your head, right? Yeah. It's like in a horror film.
Oh man. By the way, I think I found a picture from the Hollywood Christmas parade.
Yes.
And weren't we just we're in cars. You had mentioned that we had floats. I don't think we had a float.
We did it multiple years.
On 1 year? Oh, okay.
So the year that we had the theme song going, it was a giant float with a globe on it. Can you believe it?
Of course, of course.
Everything
with
the globe.
Didn't you do 1 year where it was like, it was you guys and like Rodney Dangerfield or something?
Oh, that's
like
a great story. Me and Ben Savage and Rodney Dangerfield. We got, his car broke down, so he and his wife ended up on ours. It was the...
Wow.
What show are you on? I've never heard of it. Honey, you ever heard of this show? We're like, it's a kid's show, Mr. Dangerfield. And then he didn't realize how long the parade was. It was only like, I don't know, a mile.
3 miles?
It took like an hour and a half. And his car broke down, so we had to get into our car. And Ben and I were just petrified, staring up at Rodney Dangerfield. And he's just like, who are you? Because what ended up happening was the fans knew us because they were all kids. It's like families. Right. It's a holiday parade.
Yeah.
So they were freaking out about us. And then only like every, 100 people or so, there'd be some dude going like, hey, Rodney, no respect.
No respect. No respect.
And that would all no he would respect. Get. So he kept getting more and more upset that we were getting all this attention and he had no clue who we were. So then he finally just said, you know what? Can we stop? How long is this thing? I want to get off. And they were like, well, we can't stop the parade unless there's a medical emergency. So like 5 minutes go by and he goes, you know what? It's a medical emergency. Get me an ambulance. I got to get out of here.
No way. And they did.
They stopped the parade. Rodney Dangerfield stopped the parade to get away from us. And they took him away in an ambulance. He's like, yeah, it's a medical emergency. I got chest pains. Get me out of here. And we were like, oh my God. So they escorted him away in an ambulance halfway through the parade. But then Ben
what a great story.
Okay, we can relax.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to use that if I ever need to get away from this podcast immediately. Like for I'm just going to be like, medical emergency.
Medical
bring
emergency.
Me an ambulance. Get me away from these two.
Danielle Fishel, no respect, no respect. Oh, that's so funny.
That's a great story,
that's
writer.
A great Hollywood story.
Hollywood Christmas parade.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
As a podcast focused on reliving memories from our past, I can tell you firsthand, as you get older, your memory just isn't as reliable as it used to be.
Yeah, if we didn't have Will here, there would be a lot of dead air.
That is true, Robert. Well, guys, since I know you need a little help, you're going to love Legacy Box. It's the safest way to digitize your home videos and pictures, even when you think you don't have a way to watch them anymore.
Oh, this is perfect, especially with Mother's Day right around the corner.
It really is the perfect gift for the whole family, whether it's a sweet 16 or college graduation.
First steps or performing a Backstreet Boys dance in between scenes on your childhood network sitcom. This is the way to reconnect with your history.
The process is so easy. You just fill your legacy box with old VHS or camcorder tapes, pictures, negatives, film reels. I mean, they even work with over 15 different types of analog media, so they have you covered.
Then you just send the box back, and their team professionally digitizes everything by hand in the U.S., and you'll get it all back on the cloud or on a thumb drive, along with your originals.
I recently sent off my first box to Legacy Box, and I got into my old storage unit and found about 40 tapes, all different media, and I was able to label each one and send it off. I cannot wait to see what these tapes hold.
Jensen and I also recently got some of his home videos digitized, and being able to hear his parents' voices again has been a real gift.
So join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
It's time to connect with your past and make sure those memories are preserved properly.
That's legacybox.com/world.
Summer is steadily approaching, and you know what that means.
Wearing a shirt at the beach so I don't look like a sad radish for the entire vacation?
Okay, maybe.
Being thirsty?
Yes, Ryder, you got it. It is time to go outside and bask in the glory that is sunshine with barbecues and hikes and trips to exotic locations.
With your shirt on?
Yes, with your shirt on.
It is time to jump into a camper van with your son and your wife and
torture everyone. Well, with all these summer activities, it's so important that you stay hydrated.
And we're here to tell you all about Liquid IV. It has three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick.
It's clear why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America.
You just rip open a packet and pour it into your water and bam, you're hydrating with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. But most importantly, it tastes good.
It's so easy and perfect after a workout, which I do to replenish after a nice long run.
And you can travel with Liquid IV right there in your pocket. Add it to a water on a flight or after a big night when you need just a little assistance to get up in the morning.
Tear, pour, live more. One stick plus 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. And with sugar-free flavors like white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime, you can't miss.
Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV.
Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You are right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Bouqs.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD.
So Mr. Feeney announces that this year's geography tournament has a prize to be the Bat Boy at the upcoming World Series. And we realize that Corey is suddenly very interested, even though he has never really been interested in geography before. Corey says he thinks it's a mistake that Feeney wants to take Minkus to the tournament. And Feeney says he's full of confidence in Minkus. And we get Feeney doing the callback. That's actually the third time it gets, the second time it gets called back. We get there's Minkus, is it Minkus? Then Corey says Minkus, is it Minkus a second time? And then Feeney at the end calls back and says, no, I have full confidence in Minkus. My confidence is in Minkus.
That's
so,
right.
All in the first two scenes, we've have the same joke three times, which means it was clearly a favorite of at least one person.
It must, must have killed at a table read and at a run through. And they're like, this is working.
This is the this one. Is we want it. Yeah. So we are then in the kitchen. Eric
well, hold
says,
on. I just want to talk about the when you see the awards on the wall. You know, I love that because I knew what was coming. I was like, oh, there's going to be something else taking that place. And I don't know if I just remembered that or if it's just a perfect setup. But, you know, knowing that the plaque is going to come or, you know, not come this year, was I just love that visual.
Yeah, that was a good visual. I did not even think ahead to like what was going to go in that spot because I don't remember the episode at all. So I didn't remember if Minkus ended up doing
it.
I wasn't in it.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember the episode at all. So I didn't know if Minkus was going to end up coming in and saving the day or I so it didn't even occur to me like what's going to go in that spot. I just, it went right past me. But then obviously seeing it called back later is special.
Even though you weren't in this, this is always how I wonder, you know, how far ahead they think. So this is the first episode we shot. They already have to have a bunch written. I wonder if Topanga is even named yet. Like by this point, for the first episode shoot.
Four episodes ahead or three or four scripts from the
yeah. Yeah. I wonder if the name Topanga has even come out of anybody's mouth yet. I'm just curious.
I don't think so. I don't know. I bet Topanga was probably a last minute addition to the script. Like,
well, I think that probably what happened, and I don't remember if we talked about this when we did the episode for Corey's Alternative Friends. The storyline was based on the true story that Michael Jacobs actually did try and straighten his hair.
Yeah.
So I bet you that pitch was already laid out as an episode. Like, I'm sure that they had by this time. But if you think about it, that storyline, then, you know, that's the pitch. And then it leads to, he gets stuck at this weirdo table because he's ostracized. What if there's a girl at the weirdo table who becomes, you know, a love interest or his first kiss? So I wonder how far along in the development of that storyline Topanga entered, you know, but I imagine it was story first. And then who can be the person that, you know, makes being weird cool? Let's make it a girl character and then created Topanga out of that. But yeah, I have no idea if it was here.
Yeah, I'm curious how far along we were.
I don't think I knew that it was a true story about Michael straightening his hair. I don't think I knew that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was all based on him trying it as a kid.
Yeah, he actually did straighten his hair, apparently.
Yep. That's funny. Okay, so we're in the kitchen. Eric says he cannot babysit on Friday because he's taking Heather to the Aerosmith concert.
Aerosmith!
And so Jensen asked me, we went to the Aerosmith concert after we did this episode because...
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I think it was the next year. It was probably season two.
Year.
Season two or three. At least. Yeah.
Yeah.
So crazy. That was my first concert.
That's awesome. I have a picture
of
it on my wall.
And we went backstage.
We met everybody, and I have this great photo of all of us with the band. It was great. And we're with the whole band. It's awesome. It's really cool.
Yeah, I would love to see that picture.
We went
in a limo.
Did we? We all got a limo together. Uh-huh. Where was it? I don't think it was in L.A. It was outside of town somewhere at a big stadium, right?
Was it Orange County, maybe? Did we drive that far?
Was it the pond?
Gosh, I have no idea. I just know it was a drive, and we all took a limo together. That's right. Yeah. And
it was everyone.
We didn't stay the whole concert, did we? If memory serves, we did not stay for the whole show.
We went backstage before the show.
Yeah, it was before the show.
And then
I think we stayed
for a few songs, and then because we were all kids, they brought us home early. So it was kind of like they hadn't gotten it. We weren't to the B-sides yet. We hadn't heard Dream On or any of the big ones by this point. It was kind of like, they're new stuff, and then we're gone.
Mm-hmm. It was cool, though. Writer, myself, Will, Ben, and we went with Angel and Vicky.
We did.
Angel and Vicky.
Our PE, our quote-unquote physical trainers, our PE teachers, that taught us and the home improvement kids.
For that rec period that we talked about, they would always come every day? They would come to sort of help lead us in our rec time. But they also became friends.
Yeah,
business personal edge? Wasn't that what it was called? It was
personal edge training.
Yep. Yeah.
But how did they then become so involved in our social lives too?
Great question.
Because I also have pictures, like we went to baseball games. I have pictures of me with Eric Karros and Rick Garcia and Angel and Vicky at base at Dodger games.
I went to Amsterdam with Angel.
Yeah. Danielle, we produced a video with Angel. Rollerblading video. We sure did. Yeah, so Angel and Vicky
skating video.
Yeah. I have it. I just sent a picture of it to Danielle. Not that long ago. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, so we got very intertwined with Angel and Vicky, and at this stage in our connection with them, they were just really good at hustling connections to stuff. Like I remember them getting backstage passes to Aerosmith. So they would always just call us or invite us to stuff. And they were just always like finding a business angle, or they would get us. Like, I remember I got a free snowboard one time
because they would be like,
hey, this company wants it, which at the time, like I didn't think in those terms. I mean, now I think it's kind of understood that you get like free stuff if you're on a TV show and you just promote it or whatever. But back then they were in that teen magazine circle somehow, I guess, because they were
Did you ever go to the Nike store?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever do the days where they would bring you to the Nike store and they literally, it was like the store was empty and they go pick and you could walk out
with
Reebok
too.
Maybe it was Reebok. Maybe it was Reebok and not Nike. It might have been Reebok.
Yeah, I think it may have been.
And you did that with Angel and Vicky, or you just did that because
they invited
you?
I don't know if it was Angel and Vicky or it had something to do with Boy Meets World, but it was just like you could walk around the store and fill up bags of shoes and clothes. And I mean, it was insane. It was not, you only did it once or twice, but it was, you got all this free stuff. And then Angel and Vicky got us Oxygens. Remember that? Which was like the top of the line rollerblade at the time. It was like the coolest thing in the world. They got us these pairs of they were called Oxygens. And I remember
Ryder and I did an inline skating video, and we've never heard of it. And we're experts in inline skating.
You're pro inline skaters, aren't you?
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know where you're getting this information.
I'll never forget
anybody
that.
Knows the inline skates, it's us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I went to Camp Rollerblade. Probably after this first season. There was, yeah. I don't know if it's still around, but and it was right in my hometown in Santa Rosa, which is like right near where I grew up. They were the big push for inline skating as like a movement at the time. And where I, in Santa Rosa, there is a Snoopy ice skating rink. And it's the daughter of Charles Schulz, who created Snoopy, and they have this ice skating rink, and it's world famous. And she was a huge supporter of inline skating, and she like started Camp Rollerblade, and we would go and like do ramps and have like professional rollerblade teachers come and like it was a whole week of rollerblade. It was just crazy.
It seems like a camp with a lot of broken wrists.
Oh yeah, people who got wrecked. I remember like there were accidents every day. I remember watching. It was either Cheech or Chong's son. It was Cheech Marin's son, I think, who smashed his face on a ramp, and I watched it happen. Like he did some kind of amazing, because they had like 9-foot ramps. This was like serious. I wasn't that great, but yeah, it was like a skateboard camp, but it was for rollerblade, and it was like a skater culture thing. And he just wrecked. I remember watching his face bounce on the ramp. It was awful.
That's terrible.
Sounds like a fun camp.
Yeah. It actually was, I have to say.
Any camp where you can break some bones is a good time.
Yeah.
All right, scene two.
Yeah, so Amy says that she will call a sitter and they'll all go together because Amy and Alan are also going to the Aerosmith concert, and Eric is furious. He doesn't want to go to the show with his parents, says Aerosmith is too loud for people their age. And then Corey, Sean, and Ellis walk into the kitchen holding Minkus hostage, and they introduce Minkus to Amy, and we get him his adorable line, call my mother, and yelling his phone number up the stairs. So
can we talk about a couple things, first of all? Can we talk about a little bit, we do like to bracket things that haven't aged well. And a little bit of grabbing the weaker kid and surrounding him and pulling him kind of threateningly into somebody's house was a little weird for me.
I get they played it comedically, but it was a little weird,
it was a little bullyish for me.
Totally.
But then the other thing, which I'm wondering if this was an inside joke, one of kind of the first inside jokes we had, because we'd just gone through the Lemke Minkus thing, when he goes up the stairs, he said, it's the only Minkus in the book.
Oh, right.
Which I thought was a joke on the fact that they couldn't clear the Lemke name.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So it was kind of a straight up inside baseball. Like some people would think it was funny, but if you knew the whole story on the set, it was like, we could clear the name, so it's the only Minkus in the book. That's what kind of went through my head. I'm wondering if that's what it was. I bet you it was.
Yeah,
it could have been. It's also just funny because how many Minkuses have you ever heard of? And so it's also funny just on its own that, like, don't be surprised, but there's only one, you know?
It worked on a bunch of levels, but I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons they put it in, because they were able to clear the name because it was the only Minkus. Like, there was no Minkus. So.
Yeah.
And we get Lily sitting on the counter throwing away groceries, which is cute. I thought it was funny the way she says, it's hiding the liver.
And this is the first time we've all worked together. I mean, this is the first night we've shot. This is the first night in front of an audience. I'd never been in front of an audience like this before. This is the first time that you see the Matthews family. I mean, it might be the, fifth episode, but we've never done this before.
Yeah.
So that was something that was always going through my head as I was watching this, is like, this is the first time we'd ever done this.
I can imagine the energy for all of you was
super high.
Yeah, so nervous. It doesn't come across that way. By the way, it feels very much like we're in the fifth episode and not like this is the first.
It worked.
Knowing Will, though, Will's presenting, you know, he's definitely presenting more than he is comfortable in his own skin in this.
Yeah. You think? Just say the lines. Just say the lines. Yeah, it was just so nerve-wracking. It really was.
Yeah,
shows how good, like, we keep talking about Lee, who
completely in control of his body, in control of his voice.
And the great character, and is holding for laughs already, and, I mean, is just so natural.
Yeah, he is. So we go up to Corey and Eric's room. Sean says that one out of every four people is a nerd, and if you look around and no one else is there, it must be you. and they want to change his image. They are trying to convince him not to do the geography tournament. And Minkus says he'll only quit the tournament if they promise not to throw the ball at his head during bombardment anymore.
Yeah, this is the scene that bothered me, Will. It wasn't so much because, you know, the grabbing him and taking him hostage was so funny.
It might have been the whole thing. It might have been the whole thing.
This thing, I mean, and this just goes back. We've talked a lot about the nerd stuff. It's so dated. This whole notion of like that there's a normal way to be, and then there's an unusual nerdy way to be, and like the obvious question is maybe just don't throw the ball at the kid's head, you know. But like for whatever reason, the logic of this scene is that that's going to happen just because you're so different and nerdy. So don't you have to change, buddy? You have to have this nerd makeover in order to be accepted by everybody else, and that just. It blows, man.
It sucks. Yeah. It sucks. It does. It absolutely sucks as somebody, as not that kind of nerd, but as a fantasy nerd and like that type of nerd growing up, you always were a bit like pushed and you always wanted to be part of the cooler crowd.
But it also doesn't even matter what it is, right? Whatever it is, if you're an outsider, like in the 90s, if you were different in any way,
you were bad.
And that's really the worst part of American culture, but especially in the 90s, it really reached its peak. The sense that, like, you know, if you're cool, you do these certain things, or you watch these movies, or these TV shows, or listen to this music, and you have this way of speaking and acting. And if you don't adhere to those rules, whether because you're a nerd or you're gay or anything different, there must be something wrong with you, and that's your problem.
Right.
And I am so glad that that has changed because I remember feeling that, like, uncomfortable. Like, I remember wrestling with it myself, and you know, so in day to day, just feeling like there's a mainstream and I should adhere to it or live up to it. And then there's the, you know, and so the fact that we were encouraging that on our show is a real bummer.
It is. Well, I mean, I remember when you're a kid, especially during the 90s, 80s and the 90s, anything different was bad. Anything. Mm-hmm. Even if it was something good, it was bad. Yeah. So I was an actor and I was on a show on Nickelodeon. And I thought I was doing something positive and cool. And for a good year, in probably seventh or eighth grade, every time I opened my mouth to answer a question or do something in class, somebody would go, "I'm sorry, I was just acting." It was just a thing where, because that was a John Lovitz thing on SNL. And every time I opened my mouth, so it just made me not want to speak. Like, I'm just not going to raise my hand and answer a question.
Oh, I was completely outcast in my high school.
In my junior high, I was made fun of,
Yeah, and it's like you're doing something positive and something great, but it doesn't matter. You're different. You're just different and different bad.
Yeah.
And so it was, we did lay into that a little bit, especially in this episode. It's like, well, you got to like sports or you're bad. Mm-hmm. And it's
I think it probably still happens nowadays, even though like that idea writer that you're talking about isn't quite the same now, where, you know, if you're interested in anything outside the norm, you have to change, something must be wrong with you. That is different, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But like the ages of 11 to 13, maybe even 14, are just rough.
Yeah.
Everyone is trying to blend in and fit in, and please don't let anything make me stand out.
That's true.
So,
no, there's always a battle of some sorts, but whether it's not as black and white, right? It's not as like either or. I mean, I think that there's now just a general recognition of plurality and notion that and diversity, that you can be a different type of person.
It's celebrated a lot more than it was, which is good too. Yeah.
We probably talked about this maybe too much, but it was a monoculture. You know, everybody was watching the same. We had 24 million people tuning into our television show, and we were not the biggest show on television.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Crazy. So you think about how that, you know, tells people or sort of creates a model of like, this is the way to be. This is the show to watch. These are the movies that everybody. And now I think there's just so many different types of content. Yeah. There's so many different types of clothing styles. There's so many different types of music. I mean, whatever it is, it seems like there's a more of a recognition of plurality. But yes, I think locally within like a given classroom, this is always going to be a struggle, right? There's always going to be status games. There's always going to be a struggle for status and who's cool
popularity
and who's not.
In this
popularity
and
of some sort. Yes, but hopefully it's not based on such an easy archetype or an easy stereotype like the nerd versus the non-nerd.
Well, the thing that amazed me was as I got older and tried to let go of a lot of that stuff that happened to me in middle school and things like that, and became friendly again as an adult with those kids I grew up with, you found out that almost to a person, whether they were popular or not, they also hated it. They were also having the worst time in middle school or the worst time in high school. It wasn't like, oh man, I've met like three people in my life that was like, high school was the best time of my life. Everybody was struggling with it. Everybody hated it. And you thought you were the only one going through it. And even the popular kids were like, no, it was terrible on me too. I had a bad home life, or I struggled to stay popular. Or if I did that, you know, you had an eating disorder. Everybody had something.
Yeah.
So we get back into the kitchen and Eric tells his parents they cannot go to the Aerosmith concert. Eric says it's his first concert, but his parents say actually they went when Amy was pregnant with Eric. And Alan says they have third row seats. He jokes about how old guys get good seats. Mm-hmm. And Amy says maybe they can get Eric and Heather decent seats so they can at least see the stage. But Eric says he doesn't want to be at the same show as his parents. And he leaves in a huff saying he's going to go see if he can get tickets to Eric Clapton.
Acting.
I also thought there was a line from Rusty where he says, get a clue. And it seemed like that was another thing they were trying to make happen.
Trying to do it. Yep. They were definitely trying to do it. And I'd like to just quickly give a shout out to my giant purple sweatshirt.
Ah, I like your giant purple sweatshirt.
That for some reason fit at the top, but it was very, very bottom heavy.
Yeah. Very bulbous in the sleeves as well.
Bulbous. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Bulbous is a good way to describe that sweatshirt. Yeah.
You know, I think for me in this episode, one of the things that just seems like it's a little weak, the whole premise of you being so unhappy about them going to the concert alone just has really no legs.
No, like, I agree.
Yeah.
It just, I felt like there needed to be something more. Like, I'm worried you're going to embarrass me. You've never met Heather or something. There needed to be more there than just like.
So offended that you were going to be in the same place that Eric was. That was
yeah,
it.
By
the
way,
the same place.
I could see the storyline being like, wait a minute. We're not sitting together, are we? And then when you find out we're 64 rows apart, being like, good. Cool. Please, just pretend. If you see me, pretend
you
don't
know
me.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder how much of this was based on the idea that they were trying to establish. I mean, if this is the first episode we're filming, this would be Rusty's first episode, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that establishing that the parents were not, that they had some countercultural street cred, that they were kind of cool.
Right. They're not regular parents. They were cool parents.
No, I think that was very important to attracting Rusty to the part, because that's kind of Rusty's vibe. And I think that was important to establish for Michael and the team. Like, these are not going to be the typical sitcom parents. They're going to listen to cool music. They're going to wear their denim jackets, as we'll talk about later. And like, they're going to be, you know, and so I think in order to create that tension, they had to force this situation where Will's character is upset about it, like, or overly upset about it. Cause like, really there is no conflict here, right?
It's a mild problem.
It's also an acting choice, because this exact same storyline could have been taken differently if it was handled by season six Eric as opposed to season one Eric. You know, it's the same dialogue.
You beat yourself up so much, man.
No, I'm not trying to beat myself up. I'm saying the acting choice of playing it angry.
Right.
As opposed to playing it lighter and funny.
Here's the real problem with it. What does Eric do? Does Eric make a choice?
No.
Does he change?
Not.
Exactly. So it's a completely inactive protagonist.
It's basically just whining.
That's bad writing. Like, there's no choices made. Now, if Eric decided to do something, and then because of that, there was a backfired situation.
He calls and cancels the parents' tickets so they can't go.
He does something like that. But instead, it's just a presentation of a situation, and you complain about it.
Yep.
And then that situation keeps happening.
Yeah.
And then it happens again.
Yeah, and then complain about it in front of the girl who's kind of there for no real reason.
Complete inactive protagonist. No choices.
Yep.
It's a useless. Yeah.
It is absolutely, yeah. But again, played angry. Like, I'm angry the whole
episode. What's the only
episode?
Thing you can do? You have to create conflict, because there is no conflict.
You're just creating conflict.
You're struggling as an actor to create conflict. It's not your fault.
Yeah,
man.
It was very interesting.
So
but
the next day.
Bulba sweatshirt. That's what stole the scene.
The next day we're at school and Minkus tells Mr. Feeney he's resigning from the tournament. He says the tournament doesn't fit in with his new image, which is Stuart Minkus, regular guy. Minkus says that exceptional guys get bombardment balls thrown at their heads. Do you guys know of a game called Bombardment? Is that a real game?
No. It is. They've just changed the name of Bombardment. Dodgeball. is just Dodgeball.
Oh,
that's Bombardment.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Dodgeball.
Okay. But is it called Bombardment, or did we call it
Bombardment? I think they called it Bombardment. I don't know why, but it's essentially dodgeball. That's all Bombardment is. Unless somebody's like, no, the rules are different. It's the same. You throw balls at people. If it hits you, you're out. If you catch it, the person who threw it is out.
I wonder if dodgeball is trademarked or something.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is.
So Mr. Feeny tries to see if his image can wait until after the tournament. Corey stays back in the classroom. He's ready for Mr. Feeny once Minkus quits. And Mr. Feeny said there won't be a tournament. If it's going to have to be Corey in the tournament, then there will be no tournament. Because Corey has never shown any interest in geography. And Corey says he's willing to learn. Mr. Feeny says that, okay, he will agree to prep Corey for the tournament. And he hopes that the prize is actually going to lead to him wanting to learn. Mm-hmm. And now we get Feeny and Corey for the first time kind of in on a little bit of a scheme together.
Yeah.
Not really quite nice. A scheme, but yeah, it's cute that they're all right. Let's
see.
Well,
they're taking a chance on each other, right?
Exactly.
Like, I like that Mr. Feeny is willing to play this out as opposed to.
Well, that's what I mean. You think when you look back, Feeny knows he's going to lose. Feeny knows he's not going to win, but he's also seeing if Corey's going to actually learn. I mean, I think that's what it is. Don't you think that Mr. Feeny, by this point, he knows it's like, all right, the title's gone. I have no chance. Corey's not going to win this thing. But if I could get this one kid to actually learn. Mm-hmm. Right. Something that he didn't want to learn before, then I win as a teacher anyway.
Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. Right? Yeah. The only lose-lose situation here for Feeny is if he doesn't end up learning anything and he loses the tournament. But the hope is if I can at least get him to learn something, I will feel like a winner. And so we are back in the Matthews backyard. Corey is studying geography while Sean
and Ellis.
Can I
just jump in?
Yeah.
I so indelibly remember Carpe Diem, Mr. Feeny. And it's funny because I wonder how much I remember that so vividly because it was probably the first time I'd ever heard that phrase, carpe diem.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's so interesting.
He also takes
like,
that pause, though. There's the pause between carpe diem and Mr. Feeny. He doesn't go carpe diem, Mr. Feeny. He goes carpe diem, Mr. Feeny.
Yeah, well, we said it for a while, but it's so funny because the second it came out of Lee's mouth, I was like, oh my God. But yeah, I wonder how much of that is because I was backstage or at our table read, hearing that and going, what is this phrase? And I probably asked somebody or looked it up. I probably asked you, Will, because you spoke Latin at the time or read Latin at the
spoke
time.
Spoke and read spoke. Latin. Well, at the time, I did actually, yeah.
Yeah. So but, now it's one of those things you hear all the time, but 12 or 13, I probably had never heard that phrase before. So anyway, that line is like etched in my brain and it's Lee's
voice
every time
I
hear it.
You know, the other one we said all the time was Duan's line. We said, what's the point of playing if we can't throw it at his head? We said that for years too. We said that for years too, because we thought that was so funny that we just kept saying that as well. Yeah.
That's funny. All the lines that we used to repeat backstage.
Mm-hmm. You never knew which one was going to hit. And all of a sudden, it's an inside joke.
A lot of them came from the first season, though, I think. And I think it's because we were all so aware of each other's lines and we were an ensemble that we were working our way through the script. And there's lines that come and go and jokes that hit or miss. And even something that might miss in the final tape night could have landed so hard during a rehearsal that it became an inside joke for us.
Exactly. Yeah. Even if it didn't make it to air. Mm-hmm. So in the Matthews backyard, Corey is studying geography. Sean and Ellis try to get him to the park, and they say that he's studying too much. Minkus shows up in one of the greatest outfits of all time.
He looks amazing. He looks
the
amazing.
The largest shorts I've ever seen on a non-clown. Just amazing. Those big yellow shorts.
Oh, there they are. Look at that.
They're shants. Oh, man. But they're also just like a barrel around his waist, and the shoes, his feet look huge.
Backwards hat.
I mean, of course, a hood and suspenders to hold up those shorts. It's just incredible. We will put this picture on our Instagram for you, Pod Meets World Show.
Wow. You wonder about the outfits they rejected. Where they were like, nope, that's not going to work. That's not. Oh, there you go. Got it. Nailed it.
Nailed it. That's the one.
Wow.
So Corey says he needs Minkus's help studying, but Minkus says absolutely not. He tells Feeny he watched MTV's House of Style, which is where he put together this outfit. And
MTV House of Style? About clothing?
Yes, and it was hosted by supermodel Cindy Crawford.
Oh, that'll work.
But did people dress like this back then?
I think it was a very kid and play style, mode of dressing. My husband at the time dressed very much like this. Jensen Karp would have worn an outfit very much like this.
I want to find a photo of Jensen.
Yes, can we please find a picture of that? Please find a picture of that.
We'll find one. I'm not sure he ever wore suspenders like that, but he definitely wore oversized.
Suspenders doesn't seem accurate. Suspenders kind of became cool like late 90s in like a...
Yeah.
There was a moment I did remember wearing suspenders later in the 90s, but
you wore suspenders, really?
Cross Colors was big in the early 90s.
Oh, there's Teen Magazine shoots of me in suspenders.
Yes, there are. Yeah. We'll find that as well.
We'll look for those for sure. I have them all in the garage.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You're right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Bouqs.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Not a website, but a person in your community that would help you for free. Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
Express Employment Professionals is the local jobs expert you can trust, and they never charge a fee to help with your job search.
Go to expresspros.com to find the office near you or download the Express Jobs app to get started.
With a wide range of opportunities in a variety of industries, from welding to sales, forklift operator to customer service, the team at Express is ready to help you or someone you know take the next career step.
Whether you're looking for a contract job for the summer or a new full-time role, turn to Express Employment.
Interviewing with Express Employment Professionals can be as easy as a phone call, and one application with Express puts you in the running for numerous opportunities in your community.
Don't go in your job search alone.
Visit expresspros.com today.
So Minkus says he's now leaving to go watch Beavis and Butthead.
And we get even our first Beavis reference, actually.
And that's first. It got exactly. a laugh.
It got a laugh.
A
that's why they put it back. Yes.
That's why they put it back in Corey's back. Alternative yes. Friends.
Exactly why exactly. it came back. It got a woo, so it came back.
So the people in the audience loved them some Beavis and Butthead.
Wow.
It was popular at the time.
So then we are back home in the kitchen. The
Wait,
family,
before yeah. we're back home in the kitchen, this is also, I thought, isn't this the moment, Ben had a great moment that made me laugh out loud. Isn't this the snort? Where he kind of, he
oh, yes, so, where he goes.
He goes, because yeah. he's now like the quote-unquote nerd. So oh, it's yeah. like, oh, he's snorting. But the way he did it was actually very funny. Yeah, mm-hmm. that was the first time where I was like, okay, that was a good comedic
yeah,
moment right there.
Dewan,
yeah.
as Ellis, says something like, he's morphing, right? Is that what he says? He's morphing?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, mutating.
Yeah,
but
mutating,
Ben was very
maybe.
Funny.
Mutating,
Ben
yeah.
was very funny in that moment, I thought.
I thought they could have made a bigger moment out of it, because it kind of like, it was really brushed over.
But that's I thought, what I kind of liked about it, was just a quick little, yeah. like he's, oh, he snorted. Like yeah. it was, yeah, it was cool.
It's cute. So we're at home in the kitchen. The family is quizzing Corey on his geography. Eric calls out artists trying to get his parents to go to another concert. So he's naming a bunch of people. I liked the line, Tina Turner. And she says, my mother's.
My mother's. Yeah.
that's great. And then I was like, wow, is that, would that have been true? That like Tina Turner has been doing this since.
Yeah. Well, wow. I think there was, weren't Ike and Tina Turner were the early 60s, their original band group, I think was the, I might have even started the late 50s and then the early 60s. And then she obviously moved away and became much bigger in the 70s by herself. And then it was kind of 70s, 80s. Yeah. Man. But I'm pretty sure they would have been the late 50s, early 60s, Ike and Tina.
What a career.
Yeah.
They tell Eric that he should rebel and not go to the show.
Yeah.
And Eric
why would
says
you want
that,
to when you're that angry about this for some reason? Just angry all episode. Just, man,
you
I made
had
a choice
no
and
other
stuck with
choice,
it.
Will. You had no other choice. You had to pretend that you were very angry. And then we find out that you're going to be 64 rows behind them, which is very funny to me. And we're at the geography tournament. The kids and their teachers are lined up on stage. The teachers are all giving the kids massages. And
that was great.
I love the speed. Yeah.
I do,
and
too.
Seeing Ben in his suit, like, just, it's like so, like, Corey out of his element.
What a great suit, yeah. by the way. I wrote down what a great suit. It fit him perfectly. Of all the oversized clothes of the 90s, the suits were not super big. It fit him so well, and it's that great green color. But yeah,
Bill,
so,
with just do this with your shoulders and rolling his shoulders.
Yeah, are you
was
feeling
just
a little
such
tense?
A great moment. Oh, so good.
So funny. I loved it. And so we cut to Corey panicking on the stage during the tournament. Corey doesn't know how to answer the question. We see that the kids are getting very hard questions that we never saw Corey studying.
His face, though, when they cut to him, was perfect.
Yeah.
That worried, ridiculous looking around
oh my
over
God,
the top
so
look
funny.
Was hysterical. That was my actual, the first time I saw that, actual loud laugh out loud moment. That, yeah. Ryder, we talk about the equivalent of the optical flip, mm-hmm. where it is then just on his horrified face, it was hysterical.
So funny.
Oh, he was great in that moment.
It is. It's really funny. And Jensen pointed out to me while we were watching it. Jensen was like, you know what made this show different than other shows is that I think other sitcoms would have had him at least get something right. Like you would have seen him maybe not win the tournament, but like he wouldn't know nothing. And right. instead, he just literally is like, it's as if they're speaking a totally different language than he speaks. Right. And I don't know necessarily whether or not another show would have done that. But Jensen was really like, I think this separates the show that he really
funny.
Knew nothing.
Right. Well, it takes us on more of a journey, right? Because he's learned something or he's been studying so hard, which has made him more nerdy. And, you know, and we've already established that as the problem. But then the real problem is he doesn't win the contest or right. doesn't yeah. win the B. Like, so it takes it to the next level. It's good storytelling. You know, this is like you just keep twisting the expectations because it's like, oh, he's a nerd. Now he's going to go win the contest. And
yeah.
Like, no, there's still another twist coming. There's still another turn to this show.
Yeah, he still doesn't know a lot.
Anything.
He may have learned something, but he still doesn't know everything he needs to know in order to win a tournament. So Corey doesn't know how to answer the question he's given, and he is left on stage at the very end of his loss. He's by himself, and the girl who wins walks by with her trophy and says that the Bat Boy prize is stupid. I love the voices of those two girls.
Mm-hmm.
They both had like these deep voices that I just loved. I think they just made them stand out, and they were both so cute. I thought that was I mean, you very easily could have had one of your Topangas there.
Yeah.
Could have been you, Danielle.
That could have been me, if only I got to audition for the geography tournament.
You were fish girl.
Right, I was fish girl. So we're in the Matthews family living room. Eric and Heather are back home from the concert, and they are telling Corey that they saw Amy and Alan dancing in the aisle.
This was my audition piece. That was my audition scene. So I tried to look down in the row CC. Are mom and dad there? No, mom and dad are dancing in the aisles. I had to sit there and say that in New York, then on film, then in LA.
How many times did Michael tell you were doing it wrong and to do it
totally differently? You know what I honestly remember about my audition process? I remember two things. I remember that Ben was there. I'm sorry, I remember three things. I remember that Ben was there and reading with us for a different scene that wasn't that.
Probably for the pilot,
bedroom
right?
scene. It was a bedroom scene in the pilot that we read together. And then I remember going in and reading. So the process was you would first go to producers. So auditioning for shows back in the day, and I'll do this very quickly, was just the most miserable, stressful, awful day you could possibly imagine.
It still
imagine.
Is, man.
It's not as bad. I don't think it's still the full day process that it was, if I've heard, in front of theaters. Is it still the same? Because now everything's like on tape and they do this and there's so many.
Now it's harder like on tape. You have to have smaller. Your backdrop. You have to adjust your own lighting. You have to have cameras. You have to have a reader.
No, but actual, take that all day actual compared network to what
testing,
it was.
Actual network testing, yes. It depends on the show, but I don't think they do. They don't bring you in front of a room of 40 to 50 people like they used to.
Which is what it was. You're in a
but
theater.
I think they would on a sitcom. In fact, they've done test shoots for sitcoms these days where they actually go to a stage and have the actors perform it.
Yes. Oh, I'd much rather do that.
But no, with single camera stuff, I think nowadays they do mostly like a cinematic sort of screen test where you go to a studio with the director and a reader and you go do it alone. Yeah.
Which is great because this one you used to go and you'd sit the first day. So I flew in from New York to LA and then you start at like 9 o'clock in the morning and you go to producers and say there's three of you auditioning. So you walk into a room and say there's 15 producers there and you read the scenes through however you're going to read them through. And then you come out and then they'll usually say like, okay, go to lunch. That's going to take like a couple hours. They take their time. You sit there and you wait. You're all anxious. It's awful. And then you get a call from your agent or manager saying, okay, you're going to the next level, which is network. And then you go
no,
to like
studio. It'd be studio before network.
Yeah. Studio is next, right. Which is then more people in the room. And it's all the people from at the time we were Touchstone and all this kind of stuff.
Well,
like
also
that.
At this point, that's the point at which you sign a contract.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they make the actors sign a contract before you do your final audition.
All three people auditioning sign a contract.
Yes. Yep. And so you're looking at A, how much money you'll make. B, it's a thick contract. And then you'll B, how many years you're going to be committed to this thing. Because it has all your pay laid out and how much it's going to get. What kind of raise you're going to get as the years
every
go.
Year.
Because they want to lock you in. Because oftentimes you're in demand at another show or whatever. So you'd be in first position or second position. And when you sign that contract, you're agreeing to do the show if they select you by the end of that day or week or whatever the period is. Oh, it's so nerve wracking.
It's awful.
Oh, it's the worst feeling. Because then you start seeing your future. You're like, oh, I'm gonna be working this next week or 2 weeks from now or this fall or whatever, and I'm gonna be making all this money. My whole life is gonna change.
Yeah. Yes. It's insane. It's awful. And then you get the call whether you've moved on or not. And usually if you then get to network, which a lot of times, depending on what network you're going for, it's literally in this theater room where there's 50, 60 executives sitting there and you perform for them. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get there, it's been most of the day and you're exhausted, you're stressed, it's awful. Usually if you started with three people, now there's just two of you, like they've let one of you
but
go.
But you spent all day together too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you were sitting around in waiting rooms with each other with your competition, trying to be friendly. Meanwhile, going like, my life could change tonight or your life could change tonight.
Or yours
Or we
can.
Just go back to normal. It's like, oh, the worst.
It's the most terrible process in the world. So in between studio and network, Michael came out and sat down next to me. And he said, I really think you're right for this project. I just need you to calm down and relax and really listen to Ben, and I think you're going to be fine. And I noticed that he didn't talk to anybody else.
Hmm.
And Jason Marsden was that guy, my best friend again, who was auditioning with me, and he came out, and
I found out later he was like, Ben screwed up his lines during the audition process, which screwed me up. And so Ben, the joke we had was Ben, and he would said this to Jason as well. He's like, oh no, I screwed that up on purpose because I wanted Will to be Eric. Oh, wow. He was totally kidding, of course. But that was kind of the joke. And when Jason then came on the show, he's like, you know, you messed up on purpose, right? And Ben would be like, of course I messed up on purpose. but it was that, you know, we were dependent on another actor to come in, and Ben came in and we had great chemistry. But that's what I remember about not just the scene, but also that Michael was like, I really think you're right for this. I just need you to relax and listen to Ben. And that helped. Yeah. And then we got the part, but that's what it, during the scene, that's all I see as they're, I'm standing behind the couch and everything. I just go back to my audition. Cause that's all it was getting Eric with these exact lines. And then meeting Nikki, who, you know, it was always a casting director who's reading the part of the girl. And then it's like, oh, this is Nikki Cox. And it's like, yeah, it was, it just changed the whole thing. So it's very strange to,
I got to skip that whole process. I got to, yes. I didn't have to, I got to skip got to, that whole,
oh, you're so
you
lucky.
Got tortured in a whole different way.
I got tortured yes. differently.
And you got tortured publicly in front of your peers.
exactly. Congratulations. We all got to watch your torture.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, terrible. Man. It's really, a tough process.
It is.
It is a horrible process. Business and a tough process. Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys are back home. By the way, who babysat Corey and Lily?
Because
you guys,
that's a great question.
No one was there with them. It was just,
they're fine.
You're already home. So
I guess, but maybe Corey was old enough to babysit his sister.
She asked Eric to stay home and babysit them at the beginning of the episode and then said, okay, I'll call a sitter. So I don't know. Okay. I don't, maybe the sitter left when you got there. And that's not an important part to the story that
that's
when Eric arrived home,
Nebula
the sitter left.
The back of the
exactly.
House. Yeah. Exactly. It was Nebula.
Okay. So, we see that you guys, that you were upset because they weren't in their seats. They were dancing in the aisle and you are just mortified by that. And then Amy and Alan walk in their concert attire. They've got cool fits on, tie-dye shirts, denim jackets, a prairie dress with necklaces and a vest. Yeah. And
it's not embarrassing at all, but it's not like embarrassing. It's like they're totally kind of normally dressed for even slightly cool parents. You know, it's like they're not over the top crazy where he had
it's not like somebody has a mohawk and
exactly.
It's, but I think that, but going back to the time period and the place, I don't
maybe.
Know. Like, I think just being anything slightly, I mean, in LA at this time, if you were a hip parent, you would be way more extreme, right?
Yeah,
like you'd have
right.
tattoos and like, but in the 90s, then if you were in Philadelphia and you just going to an Aerosmith concert might have, I don't know.
With a hippie shirt, like he's wearing tie dye. He is crazy.
Yeah,
like,
I think
okay,
it
maybe.
Was. I mean,
but
generationally,
I guess,
it's hard for us to
town,
wrap around.
So all my friends wore tie dye. So it was like, I was like, oh, they're not dressed that strange. But I guess maybe you're right. Maybe for Philly and, you know, he's supposed to be a grocer and it's like, what are you doing?
I think
dressed
for
like
mainstream
that?
America, there was still this like, you know, 80s hangover from the 60s, 70s counterculture or
maybe.
Sorry, 80s backlash to the 60s, 70s counterculture where, you know, we were still coming out of this like yuppie period where it was like anti-counterculture.
Wall
so for
Street
them to have
and-
any nods to that sort of rock and roll counterculture would have been a little edgy at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is where the premise started to feel just a little loose for me because he just asks you directly, like, what? I don't understand. What is so difficult? Why is this so hard for you? And you have this idea that you said your parents aren't supposed to have fun. That's you're just supposed to stay home and wait for me. And I was like, that's
really?
The best answer.
That's
they
the
could,
argument you got?
That's the argument here. I feel like just the premise is a little... I don't
no,
know.
I agree. But
little
at least
wonky.
Here's the thing, though, which saved it. At least Eric didn't learn anything. Which again,
you're right,
when
it
they
saves
left
it.
The room, I was like, "Where's the mess?" He's like, "Some I'm the father that you want. Deal with it." And he walks out, and it's like, "Ah, Eric, wait, what?"
Yeah,
like it was just kind of that. The storyline didn't wrap up in any way. It was just a strange kind of story.
A real waste of Nikki Cox. She said like
I'll
two
say.
Things.
She's just sitting there the whole
I'll
scene.
And then,
like, and then she like gets up and walks to the door. It's so bizarre.
This
yeah.
is also, for the record, this is Heather. So Eric has talked about Heather since the pilot.
Yeah, you have been dating her for 5 episodes. And she
you know what I think? You know what I think? I think they probably wrote this as a sample scene to cast the character of Eric. Maybe. I bet you that this was a scene first. It was a scene first and foremost, and then they had to build a storyline around it in two different, ways. But I bet you, because it's such a monologue on your part, right? Like, there I am, and I think it was a test to figure out who the older brother was. So they probably wrote this as an audition scene.
Yeah.
Cast you and then tried to build an episode around the one scene they had already written. And I think that's why it's not that great, is because it's all about just this scene. Because really, the other scenes in the storyline are just reiterating the same point.
Yeah,
you have three scenes that do the exact same tension. And so I think that, they probably started with this scene and then just wrote backwards the two previous scenes, restating the same conflict and not really developing it.
I'll bet you're right.
Because this should have been the first scene. And then you develop it into a storyline. But instead, they just went to this scene. Yeah. And so you have the same tensions, and it doesn't develop, and it doesn't go anywhere.
I bet you're 100% right, because you're right. Yeah. Nothing happens. Nothing happens.
Well, no. Did you start dating Nikki this week? Like, this episode? Is this, like, did you guys start dating pretty much immediately?
Yes. Yes. I want to say
You met, right?
Yeah, that's how we met. I remember honestly thinking, and shout out to Nikki Cox again, we reconnected 4 or 5 years ago over email. She's such a sweetheart. I remember distinctly thinking the first time I saw her, that's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life. And then we talked, and she was so nice and so sweet that I instantly had a just insta crush on her. And we hung out that whole week. I just remember.
So what was a date like? Like, what'd you guys do?
I had my car. So we picked her up in your Celica? In my car. Yeah, we'd go in the Celica.
Did you show off your subwoofer?
I'm sure I did. You know what, Ryder? That subwoofer was awesome.
It was. I'm not making fun of you. No, I worshipped it.
Yeah, it was. We were like 15, 16 year olds dating. Yeah, we'd hold hands, and I think we did. We literally would go out and get something to eat or go to ice cream. It was like it was never serious. It was like.
Did you ever go to Ed DeBevick's?
Of course, we went. Oh, yes, Ed DeBevick's, we have to somehow talk about Ed DeBevick's.
It no longer exists, but it was a diner in LA where was all out of work actors playing characters as the waiters and waitresses. So they would be in character, sort of being like. Tough, funny.
Get
New
your
Yorker-y.
Elbows off the table.
Yeah, but it was a kid-friendly diner place where it was like amazing. A 50s diner. It was amazing. So I actually have a friend who I've become friends with, an amazing actress named Rusty Schwimmer, who worked there. And when I first met her, she was like, I served you back in the 90s.
Wow.
She's an incredible character actor. If you look her up, anybody listening, Rusty Schwimmer is one of the most talented, amazing actresses. You guys would know her in a heartbeat. She's been in everything, and for comedy and for drama. But anyway, yeah, she always talked about how she worked at Ed DeBevick's.
I had my 21st birthday party. It was one of those places where the first time I went there, I was like 13, and you'd look away. And then you'd look back, and one of the waiters or waitresses would be sitting next to you eating your fries.
Yes, they would do jokes like that.
And it's like, what? Yeah,
were
it was
they
so
in
cool.
character as like Buddy Holly and like Marilyn? Were they pretending to be actual?
They were like
people?
From the 50s. No, I don't think they ever went.
They
like,
just came up with their own characters.
Yeah, and they would then get up and dance. They would dance to was YMCA or something on the tables.
Yep. That's
it
right.
was
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
But it was all like milkshakes and French fries and grilled cheese. It was that 50s diner vibe. Yeah,
they did a spoof of it on Friends where Monica ends up working there and has to get on the table and do YMCA. And the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's absolutely Ed DeBevick's. That's Ed DeBevick's.
We should
it's the
bring
first
that
time
back,
I ever
guys.
Met Joey Lawrence. We were like 14.
We should do a Chubby's Ed DeBevick's.
There you go.
Can we do a Chubby's pop-up? We've talked about this, please.
Let's do a Chubby's pop-up. All
Hit
right.
us up if you want to do a Chubby's pop-up, but Ed DeBevick's great
We have
great
to
place.
Do it in Philly first.
Yeah, we'll do it Philly first.
Great idea. Okay. Great idea.
So Eric says his parents aren't supposed to have fun. Amy says that they got home late because they had backstage passes. They just continue to one-up you with the cool factor. Eric tries to walk out. He's going to take Heather home, but Alan stops them. They send Corey and Morgan to bed. We think Eric is going to get yelled at. And Alan says when he was younger, he had a father like the one that Eric wants now, but he really wanted a father like what Eric has. And so he just has to deal with it. Basically, his own father was like a stick in the mud. And he wanted a cool dad. And so Eric is not appreciating the fact that having a cool dad is maybe better than having a stick in the mud dad. And then he walks out of the room. And
after kissing me on the forehead.
Yeah, kisses
or
you
kissing
on the
me on the back of the head and then walking out.
And then leaves you guys alone, made you sit down even for this conversation, and then walks out, and you, as Eric, think, oh, did my cool parents just leave me alone with my girlfriend? And you guys go to kiss, and then he pops his head out and says, not that cool, and you turn back on the light. So what was he doing? What was the point?
I guess just leaving you guys alone, but like, not still alone to make out. Like, they just get alone time, like, without other parents and other kids around. Without parents and other kids around.
Okay.
So I think it was just like, hey, you can be alone, but you're not going to
You can continue your date out. Without all of these embarrassing factors in your life, but we're not going to let you
kiss.
I think
it was a button joke on a scene that made no sense. I think that's as far as they went with it. Was it's like, and then they try to kiss and they can't. Like, there's, because you do, you look at it and it's like, he learns. They tried to throw in the lesson, but it didn't really work. And then he leaves him with the girl.
You turn the light off. You like turn the lamp off, and then you have to turn the light back on.
Yeah. The rest of the house is perfectly lit, by the way. So it's just turning off the lamp right next to them, as if it plunges them into darkness. It's like, hey, we're in a slightly darker room now.
Yeah.
Like it's very.
This
strange.
Might be a good time for too much shirts.
Too much shirts.
Because Indy did not really, like, when I kept asking him about the storyline, he kept just sort of coming up with other observations, random little things. And then we kind of got derailed into being recognized and acting. So, it was interesting that I kept, you know, I've edited these conversations down a little bit. But there was like 5 minutes of me being like, but what happened here? And what happened here? And he remembers your storyline well. Well, let's see. Give it a listen.
What did you think of this episode?
It was good. I loved all of it.
What about Will's storyline? What was his storyline?
Going to a concert where his parents ruined it. And then they had a backstage pass.
Yeah.
And they had better seats.
Yeah. You only go to concerts with me and Mom, so you can't.
I don't like concerts.
You don't
They're
like concerts?
Horrible.
What concerts have you been to?
Bad concerts.
What about Corey's storyline? With Minkus. What happened there?
He loves baseball. That's why the O in boy is a baseball. Topanga, whatever her name is.
Yeah, what about her?
She wasn't in this.
She was not in this. We filmed this episode before the episode that we watched last week.
What?
Yeah, they aired them out of order. What did you think of me throwing stuff at Minkus?
I loved it.
Really?
It was so funny.
Wouldn't that be mean to do to somebody? You would get in so much trouble if you threw a paper airplane at somebody's head.
But you're good at Wait, did you make it?
Probably not. No, the props people probably pre-folded it for me.
Did you actually have to do it, Tim?
Well, yeah, you saw me. I threw
it. Did it actually hit him?
Yeah.
Did it hurt?
I don't think so. It's a paper airplane. You know, that doesn't really hurt. Do you think I look like I did then now?
Your hair. Kinda. Wait, who are the people who are watching this gonna be?
Who are listening?
Yeah.
Probably people mostly my age or like slightly younger than me who grew up watching Boy Meets World. Like people who remember it from when they were younger. Do you have anything you want to say to those people?
Hi, and I think you're right because Boy Meets World is a good show.
Oh, thanks, dude. I think that's nice.
Oh, and I hope they agree that there's too much shirts in the first episode. Too many shirts now that I think about it.
Yeah, he's just sort of blurted out
too much shirts.
But now we're calling this whole segment Too Much Shirts.
Yeah, we want to make t-shirts of it.
Yeah.
Too Much Shirt. Okay. Bye-bye, people.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. But it was so, you know, like the main storyline with Corey didn't really resonate beyond Corey liking baseball. Like that was, you know, what he.
No. But the Eric storyline, he's trying to get backstage passes and but like he picked up all those subtle nuances of which they wrote none.
I'm happy he had noticed I wasn't there. Makes me feel loved.
Totally. No, he was very concerned. You know, it was like, where's she? Because the last episode we watched was all about her.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Where'd she go? That is so cute. He now knows too many shirts.
Yeah, he corrects himself
right
away.
Now that I think about it.
Yeah, he's a little embarrassed, I think, that that's become the catchphrase because it makes him sound young. And,
doesn't know.
I think it's so funny.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves
and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You're right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Books.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Books order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Books Company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Books is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Books.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Books.com, promo code WORLD.
Books, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Not a website, but a person in your community that would help you for free. Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
Express Employment Professionals is the local jobs expert you can trust, and they never charge a fee to help with your job search.
Go to expresspros.com to find the office near you, or download the Express Jobs app to get started.
With a wide range of opportunities in a variety of industries, from welding to sales, forklift operator to customer service, the team at Express is ready to help you or someone you know take the next career step.
Whether you're looking for a contract job for the summer or a new full-time role, turn to Express Employment.
Interviewing with Express Employment Professionals can be as easy as a phone call, and one application with Express puts you in the running for numerous opportunities in your community.
Don't go in your job search alone.
Visit expresspros.com today.
So we're in Feeny's classroom. Minkus is back to his normal attire, saying he is more of a Connie Chung kind of guy than a Cindy Crawford guy. And Corey asks Minkus a geography question that was in the, you know, the tournament, that basically the one he lost on. And Minkus has the answer right away. Corey tells Mr. Feeny he tried his hardest, but Minkus would have taken home the trophy. And Mr. Feeny shows Corey that he actually got an A on this week's exam. It's his first ever A from Feeny. And Mr. Feeny has the very cute moment with Corey where he walks over and he puts the A test up on the board
where the plaque goes,
where the tournament plaque would normally have gone had he won. And, Again, we see this very cute moment, and Ben and Bill actually high five. I thought it's very cute.
It was great.
I welled up. I can't help it.
Wow, you're going to cry every episode.
I mean,
that Superman line in that one episode really got me, but I haven't quite welled up since.
This was a moderate, like a minor well up. It wasn't on par with the Superman well up, but that feeling of like, you know, I think a lot about having kids now of my own. I think a lot about what the best way is of encouraging them and of giving them compliments for when they work really hard. Like, I naturally have a tendency to say good job about just about everything. And then I realize like that isn't actually helpful. What's really helpful is when I can tell that he's really worked at something, being like, wow, I can see how hard you worked at that. And so I try to be very like aware of that language that I use and what I give him compliments on. And so seeing it happen with Feeny in this place and imagining, like, knowing the kind of pride you get when you've done something and you've achieved something, it just made, it made me well up thinking that Feeny gave this boy that truthfully is really hard on, like, he's really hard on Corey, and for valid reason. Yeah. You know, Corey is, you know, not necessarily the greatest student or whatever. He's constantly coming up with issues, but seeing him go out of his way to do the opposite, to really drive home the point that he is smart and that his effort was worth something and that he's proud of him, is what made me well up. It's like, you made Feeny proud. And don't we all want that feeling of making Feeny proud?
Well, there is that kind of realization with Feeny that whether it's compliments or whatever it is, or education or learning, you have to earn it. You always have to earn it with him. And I liked that.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we felt. It sounds so strange, but people always ask, like, were William Daniels and Mr. Feeny similar? And I always felt that way with Bill when it came to compliments with him about acting or our conduct on the set. I felt like I had to earn it. And I liked that. I liked feeling like I wanted to earn his respect. And I feel like I did eventually. But that's what I felt like that this moment with Feeny, where it's like, look what you earned. Like, you did this. You studied, you put in the time, and you earned the high five. And I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
So the tag is in the Matthews family living room. Corey is watching a baseball game. The announcer says that the Batgirl has run onto the field with a protest banner. And then we see them have, again, the discussion that's in the geography tournament. And I couldn't really tell what the joke was. Is the joke that even the baseball announcer knows the answer to this question, and like everyone knows it? How did he not know?
Yeah, I think it's just that we, you know, because when we're watching the B, we're thinking, this is so obscure. This is so the big joke is that it's not obscure.
It's not
anymore. And was this our dialogue coach Christopher Kyer's voice as well?
It might have been Chris Kyer. I couldn't tell. I was trying to listen to the voiceover.
It certainly
wasn't one of our writers, because I was like, okay, who is this? Is this Manel? Is it? I don't think it was one of our writers.
It's not one of our writers, but I remember these lines because we said these as jokes forever. This was like very much an inside joke.
I think it might have been our dialogue coach, Chris Kyer, who was at the time. He had retired, obviously, but at the time was the youngest ringmaster in the history of the Ringling Barnum and Bailey Circus. He was ringmaster at like the age of like 23 or something.
We should get Chris Kyer on the show to talk
to him.
He's
still good friends with Dee Dee, I believe, or somebody. He's still good friends with somebody.
He's also friends with Tony O'Dell, who is a dialogue coach in my world.
And a great guy. He was always very nice and very helpful. So it was great.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should try to get him on the show. That would be great. One of my favorite lines, just to recap in this episode, one of my favorite lines is when we've seen Minkus in the big yellow shants, and Mr. Feeny says, "Sometimes a man doesn't know another." Sometimes a man doesn't know a struggle until he's walked a mile in another man's humongous pants.
Humongous pants.
I thought it just made me laugh, and his delivery of it was so great. It's one of my favorites.
Yep.
So thank you for joining us for this episode. Next week, we are going to be recapping season 1, episode 6, Boys to Mensa, which originally aired on October 29th, 1993. And we have a very special guest. We will be talking to someone who sat in the death chair. We will be talking to Marty York. We're very excited to have him. Looking forward to catching up with him. And
also known for The Sandlot. Yeah, sure, we have some Sandlot fans out there.
Oh yes, how could you forget the Sandlot? Yeah. So, but we have someone who actually sat in the death chair. We've done so much talking about it. We'll get to hear what that experience was like. So follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show, and you can email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, podmeetsworldshow.com. We got merch.
Merch.
So many shirts.
Merch.
Too much shirts, one might
say.
Too
much shirts.
And yeah, I had a really good time with you guys, as always.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm just going to go hang out in my tiny little bed now, in my tiny little room that hasn't changed since 1984. That's all right.
We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Daniel Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production Danielle Romo. Producer and editor Tara Sudbach. Producer Lorraine Vurez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. Follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.